Hello, nerds. Welcome to episode 4 of the Nerds Be Heard podcast. I'm Matt, joined by me, as always, Charlie. We are going to talk about episode 5 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the penultimate episode of this season. Really cool. A lot of the stuff that we talked about throughout the last 3 episodes actually came to light. So I'm excited to get into that with you, Charlie. But similar to last week, I think we got a lot of news to unpack. I just saw an article right before we joined this call. Confirmed, Michael Keaton is coming back as Batman. He's on his flight over to London to film, according to his rep, or I guess his agency, which is probably everything I ever wanted as a kid coming true. Another iteration of the Batman. And I can't freaking wait.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about that. So yeah, I guess the production of The Flash started today. The director shared the logo and like a little teaser, which I don't know why they thought it was going to be this like, it looks like the Flash logo basically for the TV show, but it was still pretty cool. Yeah. I'm excited for the movie. And like you said, with Michael Keaton coming back as Batman, I think that's really awesome. And it's going to, I mean, he's definitely one of the best Batmans, if not the best Batman. And I think it's great that the younger generation who probably hasn't really watched the Tim Burton movies, because I mean, they don't necessarily age. They age well for me, but I don't know if they really age well for, you know, the younger generation who probably were kind of brought up on Christian Bale. So to have him back is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, both iterations of Keaton Batman, I think, held up well for me. I've watched both recently. I actually watch both about once a year. That's what, you know, I said in the last episode, what got me into like this next phase of superhero movies was Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. But what originally made me fall in love with superhero movies was Michael Keaton's Batman. Now, also, you know, Christopher Reeve's Superman, you know, holds a special place in my heart, but it's not something I watch once a year. Every once in a while, I'll go back and, you know, I love that iteration too, but not the same as Burton's Batman. What was supposed to be originally a trilogy, which we can have a whole episode on what could have been. Have you ever read what was supposed to happen with the trilogy, who Robin was?
I don't think so, or at least it doesn't ring a bell.
Really?
Yeah, who was
am I breaking news for you?
Or if you say it, maybe I'll remember.
The Robin before it was Chris O'Donnell was supposed to be with Michael Keaton, and this was perfect casting in my opinion at the time. What's his name? Damian Wayans.
Oh wow! Yeah, no, didn't know that.
Yeah, one of the Wayans brothers, man. Back when he was a huge star, upcoming star. Is it Damian or was it who's the other Wayans brother?
I'm drawing a blank.
It doesn't matter.
I always get them confused, but that would have been interesting casting, and definitely that would have been pretty cool.
It's the one from, you ever see The Sixth Man from that basketball movie?
Yeah.
That one, that Wayans brother. Him as Robin back then would have been good comedic relief. He was fit. He was a rising star. I thought it would have been perfect. So there's a lot on that. They actually had a whole casting tape with him. He was in an outfit, the whole bit, and it's out there in the interwebs. But not to stray too far off course, I just thought that was a fun fact, and I would have loved to see that, you know, finale. But for me, this is a great opportunity to bring Keaton back, to introduce him to younger audiences, for younger audiences to understand that he is the Batman. And it always goes back with the younger generation and our generation. If you've ever seen Neighbors with Zac Efron and Seth Rogen, and he's like,
"That's a great movie.
What Batman sounds like. This is my Batman." And he's like, "No, Batman sounds like this." Honestly, that's the new generation needs to see Keaton. They need to understand how cool he is and how he brought that incredible presence to the screen. And I think it's a great opportunity to maybe, they said they might even bring him into other, you know, future movies. It'll be Affleck's last iteration of Batman.
Which apparently. I'm excited that he's going to be in it as well. I mean, he's probably, I know I kind of just said Michael Keaton is the best Batman. I go back and forth. Like, I personally think Ben Affleck was the best comic accurate Batman.
Yeah, most comic accurate. Great.
And I just don't think, I mean, I know we've talked about this before and I don't need to talk about it again, but like, besides really the Snyder cut of Batman versus Superman, I don't really think he got his due. Like he didn't, I really wish he was going to get a solo movie, which obviously was supposed to happen and that fell apart. So I'm happy he's going to be brought back to this movie.
Honestly, that solo outing I was pumped for the purpose of taking him out of that world, of just, you know, gods and just a raw Batman movie. And the villain was supposed to be Joe Manganiello. It was supposed to be a little bit more grounded in reality, which it seems like Matt Reeves is doing with Robert Pattinson. You know, go back to that trailer with the R-Pats Batman and put Ben Affleck in there where he goes, "I'm vengeance."
Oh, yeah, when he's beating the crap out of that guy. It's amazing.
Imagine that was Ben Affleck, though. Imagine that was Affleck.
Even though we've talked about this before. I mean, I'm pretty excited for Robert Pattinson. Like, I was out of the roof excited about that when he was first announced. I haven't really liked from the rumors I've heard that he's really kind of not that much into the role. He supposedly, like, didn't really want to work out and to get, like, beefed up for the role, which is a little upsetting to me, but he's a brilliant actor, so I think he's gonna bring a new take. There hasn't really, I mean, besides Christian Bale, I mean, I put them both in the same type of caliber as, like, they are quality Academy Award type actors. So yeah. Well, I guess so is Ben Affleck. So I mean, a lot of good people have played Batman.
Well, yeah, it's a coveted role. I mean, and even some great actors have played him and done a terrible job, like George Clooney. So
that wasn't all his fault, though. I mean,
yeah, it was, you know, look, Schumacher's Batman, you know, he, you know what, you gotta admire him for swinging for the fences and trying to bring a new world to a new audience, but he really dropped the ball there. And there's not much really to shine, but if you were to compare the two Schumacher Batmans, I'd say Val Kilmer takes the cake over George Clooney
100%.
To round about this Batman discussion, because it's my favorite topic. Batman's my favorite superhero. I know this is a predominantly at the moment Marvel related podcast, but we will get into the DC universe at certain points. Batman is by far and away my favorite. I could say something good about every Batman. I could say that Ben Affleck is the most, like we said, most comic accurate Batman, and has done an extraordinary job with the material that he's been presented with. Would love to see him in a solo outing, but if all I get to do is see him in The Flash, I think that's going to be awesome. I love the connection about, you know, the story is probably going to go back to The Flash trying to, you know, go back in history and save his mother. I think that'll have a good dynamic, you know, with the Bruce Wayne's parents. Most comic accurate. Best Batman trilogy / movies, in my opinion, is the Dark Knight trilogy. I know you might disagree with that, but I just, they're so well made. Christopher Nolan's one of the best actors.
I agree with that.
Bale just doesn't top the list for me. I think that he did a great job with the material, but not the best Batman. But for me, you know, forget about the TV shows, forget about the cartoons for a second, because there's some, the animated series is really great, but the Batman, the original Batman for me, is Michael Keaton, and it's what made Batman cool. It's what made Batman one of the most badass characters in superhero history, and Keaton, I think, gets to wear that badge, so he will always be my Batman. Though Ben Affleck was a worthy successor. And then if I were to rank the others, I mean, honestly, it's just, you know, Clooney's last, Val Kilmer's after Ben Affleck, I guess. And then we'll see. The jury's out on Art Pats, but if that trailer has anything to do with it, I think it's going to be a phenomenal movie, and I think it's going to be grounded. It's going to be very similar to the Nolan trilogy. But for me, what Nolan dropped the ball on is, and what they're going to do with Chris, with Matt Reeves is The Long Halloween, which is honestly one of the best Batman stories you could possibly dive into. So it's going to be like a great mixture of like the Arkham games, if you've ever played those.
Yeah.
Combined with like the Nolan universe. I'm pumped. And I think they confirmed it's on one of the Earths in the multiverse.
Yeah, I think they've confirmed that it's now going to be take place on Earth 2. I think that's their way of having that be a franchise on its own. And the Flash movies probably going to play a lot into that, opening up the multiverse and whatnot. But so everyone, most audiences are so used to the way Marvel has done things that everything is connected. And unfortunately, DC just hasn't been able to replicate that. They're kind of playing catch up. So I think this is going to be their way of having everything that they want going on.
Just do what the fans want and make a Batman Beyond series and we'll be fine.
Maybe Michael Keaton will be in that.
That's what I'm saying. And
the thing is, Michael Keaton, let's not forget, we're talking about Marvel too. I mean, he's the Vulture in the Spider-Man universe, and he's definitely coming back. He's not
done. Yeah, they're going to do Sinister Six for sure. Yeah. I pray to the movie gods, all right? If Keaton doesn't say, "I'm Batman,"
at he'll least say that. Once,
he has to.
Yeah, he has to.
And if they're going to try to throw humor into it, you could have him and Affleck meeting. And I'm Batman. No, I'm Batman.
It's
just
kind of like. It's so funny to me that that's definitely a Marvel thing. Let's hope DC does that.
I love that they do dark, but.
Yeah, I mean, if the greatest producer of all time, Kevin Feige, was in charge of those characters, you would definitely get that interaction.
I'm sorry. I think you said Spielberg inaccurately.
No, a huge Spielberg fan. But unfortunately, Kevin Feige, as a producer, I know we've had this argument / debate before. It's just different. He is the greatest producer of all time right now.
You mean Neil Moritz, the producer of the Fast Saga? Is that who you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Let's not get into that. But talking about other great news for today, one of my most highly anticipated movies, I've been waiting for footage. We finally got the trailer and the posters today for Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Yeah,
I am so pumped for this movie. I love the guy who's playing him, Simu Liu. I'm a huge fan of the show called Kim's Convenience. It's a Canadian comedy, which he's one of the stars of. So he's been on my radar for a while. When I found out he got this role, I couldn't be. He's a movie star. He is going to have a breakout role, and he's going to play a huge part in the Marvel Universe going forward. And I love that, you know, he's going to be the first real Asian superhero on a screen. It's an entire Asian cast, entire Asian crew. It's just really, it's exciting. And it's just, once again, Marvel being on the forefront. And I thought the trailer looked amazing. It's going to bring in the Ten Rings, which is an organization that's been around since the very first Iron Man movie.
Yep. And they were the ones that captured Tony Stark. Yep.
And the real Mandarin is going to be in this movie, who's actually his father. So I'm like super pumped that that's finally going to get to be in the Marvel Universe, unlike the fake...
You mean to tell me Trevor's not coming back?
Yeah, Trevor's not Sir coming
Benjamin
back.
Benjamin Kingsley?
Which was, that was such a, I know you like that movie, and I'm not going to sit here and say I don't either, but when that happened, like, I was kind of, when I was really upset that that was just like a fake out, that I got flashbacks with the whole talking about WandaVision again with the Quicksilver not actually being the real Quicksilver. I don't know. That was really disappointing. And it was a waste of Ben Kingsley, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I like all the Iron Man movies because I love Tony Stark. And Tony Stark tops the list for me of Marvel characters. But no, I was a little bit let down by Iron Man 3. For me, I love Iron Man 1 and 2. And honestly, I don't think Iron Man 2 gets enough credit. Couple things. It introduced Don Cheadle as Colonel Rhodes,
which is great.
And to me, the most criminally underrated character in the MCU was Justin Hammer. I think Sam Rockwell did a phenomenal job at making a somewhat dull character in the comics into a comedic, awesome young version of Justin Hammer. That was like a foe, but almost in a comedic way to Tony Stark. And that's a character I hope they bring back. But Iron Man 3, I don't think lived up to the precedence that Iron Man 1 and 2 provided in terms of making great entries. It's a forgettable entry.
It's like, it's weird. It's like a good movie, but it doesn't necessarily fit within the whole Marvel universe. Like sometimes I look back at that movie and I'm like, I'm actually surprised Kevin Feige allowed that entry to happen. It just really felt more like a standalone movie. And then, but one of the problems with Iron Man 2, even though I love that, that was just a setup for Avengers in reality. It was kind of like they were just getting the ball rolling by introducing Black Widow and whatnot. So that suffered a little bit from there. I really wish we could get some more Iron Man movies, but that character's obviously been fleshed out.
Unless you do Tom Cruise.
Well, yeah.
Tom, awesome.
Yes.
He'd do his own stunts flying around in armor.
But what did you think of the Shang-Chi trailer?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. These certain characters that I'm not as familiar with in the MCU, I'm gonna be honest, I wasn't even aware this movie was coming out. So, super bad on me for my fellow nerds, but it was a surprise to me. I remember seeing it on the list when they come out with all the movies in the pipeline, but I forgot. And honestly, the only thing I recognized of it was the 10 Rings organization. And I just thought to myself, all right, are they actually going to bring the real Mandarin in? And so that's what I was more curious about with this movie. But now it looks like it's going to be funny. It's going to be a great all Asian cast. I think it's going to be exciting, something new, a different piece of that world that we haven't connected to yet. And honestly, if we know Kevin Feige, there's somehow this is going to connect in with all the other movies, going to feed in probably into the Doctor Strange movie somehow. I'm really excited. And I didn't realize it's coming in September. And interestingly enough, only in theaters.
As of right now,
coming straight to Disney. So this is giving me hope that movies are starting to come out. Fast and Furious coming out in May. And again, only in theaters. So it's given me hope that maybe the theater experience will come back. A lot of theaters going under. And for me to get that experience back will be great. And maybe they'll go and release some more movies like Bond and pull them in, hopefully.
I think for the Marvel movies, the theater experience is definitely will be back. I think Black Widow, I know we talked about this before, and now after seeing, not to dive into spoilers yet, of this episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, there's a reason they are trying to get this movie out now, and they didn't really have any choice. You know, they've delayed it so many times, and I know that Kevin Feige, from what I've heard, really wants to keep the theatrical movies in the movie theater and the badass shows he's making for Disney Plus on Disney Plus to separate them. So unless they see that people still aren't going to movie theaters by September, I think this and the Eternals and Spider-Man will probably be movie theaters only.
Yeah, which good. I will be the first person in line back at theaters, mask or no mask, whatever they require, I'll be there. So that's exciting. Anything else? Any other news that we missed? I think we talked about a lot.
One thing I saw today, which there's not much information on, but I don't know if you're familiar with the actress Olivia Colman. She's Academy Award winning. She's really, really good. Yep. She's been rumored to be one of the stars of Secret Invasion, Disney Plus show with Samuel L. Jackson. So that's Marvel continues to get like these A-list actors, which is amazing to me. Like they've really made these big budget movies something that attracts the top talent in Hollywood, not just dumb quote unquote action stars, which I love.
Yeah, but what's usually great about Marvel is they make these big announcements. You're all surprised, like, oh, this person's going to join. And then you start to fantasize about, well, what can they bring to the table? You know, like when they announced Christian Bale was going to be joining Thor. And, you know, you find out far in advance. But on this episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, an A-list actress, one of the most famous actresses in television history, made a surprise cameo, or not even cameo, it's going to be hopefully a main character in the future of the MCU. Holy crap. I don't know. We'll probably talk about that on the episode, not spoil it right now, but damn.
Yeah, that I can't believe they kept that a secret, especially that her character shows up in Black Widow. I think it's amazing. And honestly, like you said, we'll talk about it when we get into the episode. That was the big character reveal that everyone had been talking about. I personally was a little disappointed because that definitely did not live up to my expectations. But this was something that was so far out of left field for me that when I saw it, I was kind of just like, my jaw kind of dropped. I was taken aback. I'm like, oh, wow, they got her to be in Marvel. Once again, amazing talent. They all want a piece of the Marvel pie, which is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, running out of characters. So
you think, yeah. But then you get the characters like that's another thing that's just so great about Marvel. So with Shang-Chi coming, and then the Eternals, they're two properties that like the average person has no idea what they are, I think they're going to turn into what you know Marvel did with Guardians of the Galaxy. No one cared about them, and they make them household names, and there's a ton of comic book characters in the Marvel arsenal that I think they're just going to keep taking advantage of. And you're not even going to miss, I've said this before, but like the main characters that they made stars over the course of all of the movies.
Yeah. It's been almost 15 years of MCU, which is crazy.
It is. Insane.
What's the one character in the MCU that hasn't, or not the MCU, just what's the one Marvel character that hasn't made it into the MCU yet that you're desperate to see them cast or bring into the fold?
So this is a very easy question for me. He's one of my favorite characters. He's been played before, but not in the MCU, and that's Daredevil. And I kind of want Charlie Cox to come over from the Netflix Daredevil show. I think that's going to happen. He's going to play a part within the, whether he's in Spider-Man or he's in Doctor Strange or both of the above. And that's how they're going to explain how he comes in. And I don't even care if he just plays like a different version of Matt Murdock, but he's just playing, it's that actor. I loved him. He was this huge standout for me for the Marvel shows. And I was always upset that was a character that they didn't use in the movies.
Well, you don't think that Ben Affleck is a better Matt Murdock than Charlie Cox?
Unfortunately, I do not, Matthew.
Are you crazy? I actually was one of the few people that actually enjoyed that movie.
Me too, but wait, that was a joke, right?
It was absolutely a joke. But I actually enjoyed the movie, and I don't think he did as bad of a job as you know the internet gives him credit for.
I agree. I need a lot of pressure. The one thing that's awesome about Ben Affleck, I mean, he's a huge comic book guy, which like I think sometimes people forget. I mean, huge. Yep. So I kind of would like to see him come over into the MCU. And I actually think that could happen, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know who I'd want him to play, but.
Yeah, well, here's if I could pick one character, and it's in the same vein because we think alike. But one of my favorite Marvel characters, if not, it's my favorite Marvel character, actually, is The Punisher. And so same thing, Netflix show. I was very disappointed with the second season and even most of the first season of The Punisher on Netflix. I think they didn't do really well with the story and the character, but I think John Bernthal did a great job as Frank Castle. I would like to see them bring the Punisher into the fold. He's a little bit violent for Disney, so we'll see. I wouldn't mind if John Bernthal stayed in the role, similar to Charlie Cox. You can do a reboot of the character using the same actor. But I wish, I hoped, I wish that they actually thought further down the line and would have actually cast Frank Grillo as the Punisher instead of Crossbones.
Yeah. He's totally wasted.
Yeah, because he would have been the perfect Frank Castle, in my opinion. And he actually kind of plays that role in the Purge series, if you've ever watched that. And so I think there's a missed opportunity there. But I would love for them to bring Punisher into the fold. I think it'll be tough because I don't think Kevin Feige's the biggest fan of him. I don't think it's, a kid-friendly character. And especially with everything going on with mass shootings, it might be tough. But Punisher really resonates with military and police, and which is almost ironic. I'd love to see him. And then,
speaking of the Punisher, though, do you feel that that character could be reimagined for today's time? And if so, is that something that you would be for, or would you rather them just not tarnish that character?
If anyone could do it, it's Kevin Feige and the MCU, because they have redefined characters before and made it work for the modern day. So I'm open to it, but they got to be delicate because it's such an important character to a lot of people. And if you water it down in a way, you take away what makes the Punisher so compelling as a character. The Punisher isn't a hero, and he's not someone to idolize. And I think that's the big thing that people get wrong about the character. He's not someone you're supposed to look up to. He's someone you're supposed to fear, and someone you're supposed to feel sorry for. He's a beaten down, broken man with very limited belief system other than vengeance, basically. And he's tunnel vision, and he's a man of purpose. But I think that's what makes him so exciting to watch. I personally like every iteration that they've come out with. I think Thomas Jane didn't get enough credit. I actually loved they did a short because he was trying to get campaign to get back into the role. I don't know if you saw that.
It did. I liked Thomas Jane as Frank Castle. I didn't mind that movie.
I love the movie. I love the movie, actually. I think they did a really good job with it. I like things grounded in reality. And then I just love how dedicated Thomas Jane is to the character that he even campaigned to do a role and funded his own short, which was really funny and cool and a great throwback. And it had some characters in there, some unique characters that people often forget if you go back and rewatch it. Got Ben Foster's in that movie. And he's hilarious, and Rebecca Romijn, she's her second Marvel movie. Mystique. But I love that flick. But I just thought that was me a good question to bring up because
was fun. I think you're gonna be a Moon Knight guy. I mean, he's not the Punisher, but I think that's something that you're gonna really and is something you're looking for.
Well, if anyone can sell me, it's Oscar Isaac and that badass video that we talked about last week. So I'm in. So let's get into the episodes.
Yeah. So I thought this was a great episode. I liked how it kind of started right where we left off with the previous episode. John Walker kind of on the run after he just brutally murdered that person in the middle of the public when everyone was filming him. And he kind of ends up meeting up immediately in the beginning of the episode with Bucky and Sam. And we get right into it. And to me, it was probably my favorite action sequence of the show so far. I know it's different than what we've seen it wasn't like a big scale like in the first episode, but I just thought the fight was, it was awesome. And as much as I've like have been hating on the John Walker character, Wyatt Russell is like crushing that role. And the fact that you hate him so much just shows how good he is. And yep. I really, really enjoyed that fight. I thought it was awesome. What did you think?
It was a badass fight, and John Walker is a worthy foe because it takes both Sam and Bucky to take him down. The guy's got skills. He's now a super soldier, and even beat the crap out of Bucky in certain parts of that fight, which was frustrating for me as Team Bucky, as a big. I'm so much of a Bucky fan. I tatted up my arm to make it look bionic, got his ass handed to him a few times. So John Walker is not to be messed with, and I think the deeper down the path of revenge that he goes, they're building, right? They're stirring, and he's going to be quite a foe. It's all coming to a head, and this episode really, to me, felt like that building block penultimate episode to basically go out with a bang. There's a lot of things stirring in the pot. There's a lot of building out of the remainder of the story and the conflict that is going to result in this final episode. That really kicked it off with a bang. And you could see he doesn't see what he did wrong. And he, there's exchanges there where he's like, I did what I had to do. I'm a soldier. We could have been partners. And he just, even when he's, so ultimately at the end of that fight scene, Bucky and Sam learn how to work together, and they take him down in a badass fight or end of the fight, tag team style, like, launching him up, and then the other guy takes him down.
Yeah, I mean, it was a brutal fight and it definitely didn't end like all cookie cutter. I mean, Sam got his ass kicked, but like he held his own at the same time. What I thought it was amazing when John Walker ripped his wings off. It's definitely foreshadowing what's to come. But the one thing I also really liked about the scene was, which is why I now have totally cemented my opinion on Sam should be Captain America. He still tried to see the good in John Walker and was trying to talk him down and tried to give him his one last chance to like save him. Throughout the course of the show, I wasn't sure if I necessarily would have expected that. Like kind of, he gave him his chance. And I know I've said this in previous episodes that like he'd be done with him, but he really is still trying to save him, but he's officially unsavable.
Yeah, and Bucky, you could see, was like reluctantly following the lead of Sam, but he's kind of like, no, let's do this.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, but that's why Bucky, at least this version of him that they've built in the MCU, in my opinion, is not meant to be Captain America. Definitely at this point doesn't really have that moral compass. He definitely leads more with emotion, like you said. He wanted to just, he did not want to talk John Walker down. He just wanted to kill him. He was out for blood immediately, which made the fight, it gave the fight a pretty good dynamic.
Which he even says later in the episode, I have my bad dreams. I have my memories, which means there's still a piece of the Winter Soldier in me. And I think that's what you see in this fight sequence is when he's out for blood, he's out for blood and he's swinging for the fences. But that's what makes me, I like torn characters. I love Bucky. I love what Sebastian Stan's doing with this character. I love that they're giving him the screen time and the character development. I honestly don't think he's done with the movies. I think they're going to bring him back into the fold. White Wolf is going to be probably a big piece of maybe the Black Panther universe. So I'm excited what they've done. But ultimately what happens is they bring John Walker in, Sam takes the shield. Sam doesn't take the shield.
Yeah.
Bucky lays it down next to him and gives him the look like, this belonged to you. This is what Steve wanted, and kind of like walks off, like shaking.
Which I thought that was a great scene. I love that he did that. And kind of how you said, like, this show has really been all about character development, which that isn't really what we were sold on, in my opinion. We were sold on like a buddy cop type show. And in my opinion, it hasn't been that at all, but I don't think that's a bad thing. They've really have developed these characters. And like you said, they both obviously are going to have a future within this universe.
Yeah. And you really see their relationship build throughout this episode as well. From the reluctant, we're working together, it means to an end, to a bromance and a friendship and a loyalty that you really see. And most of that development comes from the end of Bucky, which we'll get into. But I think he's really grown fond and actually recognizes Sam as a leader, as someone that is worthy of Steve's shield and is worthy of the Captain America mantle, and someone that he would, you know, like to, you know, stand beside in battle, which I think is gonna probably further play out in the last episode. So he basically drops the shield, and it's almost like he's dropping that weight. The way he acted it was really great, because he drops it and it's like he's dropping the weight of, you know, any goal or dream or thoughts in the back of his mind that maybe the shield belonged to him. You could see he let go of it. He's like, this belongs to you. This is yours. And he lets go. Right. And I think there was this almost, you know, maybe I should take the shield. Maybe throughout the series, I think now it's like, no, this belongs to you, Sam. And he acknowledges that he didn't fully understand the weight of the shield to be carried by a black man, which actually leads to one of the next scenes where we get to see that amazing character again in Isaiah. So basically they bring John Walker in. He goes through due process, basically gets dishonorably discharged from the military without benefits,
stripped of all everything. Yeah
And he's pissed, and he's slamming his fist, and he's arguing, and he still thinks he's justified. And then cut to Sam with the shield going to visit Isaiah, and he wants to understand. He's like, basically he goes into Isaiah's house and he's like, I need to understand why, like, what happened to you. Isaiah basically, like, every black man understands, you know, you're just refusing to accept reality, and makes reference to Steve being the blonde haired, blue eyed, perfect man, and that, you know, he could have never been the next Captain America, and what they did to him. He experienced some awful racism, I think that was Sam's. For me, I think that scene served as a big purpose in, you know, Sam deciding whether or not he's going to step into the Captain America mantle, because he's recognizing the weight that it carries as being like the, you know, first African-American Captain America, what that means in the world. And I think he just wanted to see Isaiah's point of view and you know what really happened to him and how he was treated. It turns out Isaiah, the government doesn't know he's alive. They faked his death out of the kindness of a nurse's heart. She took a liking to him and basically faked his death and let him leave. And he's basically living under the shadow. And Sam's like, people need to hear your story. They need to know about you, which I think is going to play a role in the last episode. But I thought that was a really powerful scene, because I think it was really ultimately what Sam did. To me, that Sam made a decision right then and there. To me, I'm going to take on this.
Completely agree with you. It's his way now, after I mean, everything you said, you took the words right out of my mouth. He went there for clarity. He wanted to learn, and he now wants to honor Isaiah and all the terrible things that have happened and show that we can be better, and he is going to unite everybody. I mean, I thought that scene was so powerful. I actually, quite frankly, shed a tear. Like, it was brilliantly acted. And I'm just so excited for the future of what that character is going to bring.
Yeah, honestly, incredibly acted. Anthony Mackie just stole the scene there. Last time, I think Isaiah stole the scene and really, you know, struck a chord with the audience. But I think Sam and his reaction to the whole thing, he just impeccably acted. And you could see his transition. It's like, all right, this is my responsibility. And I can show both sides. I can show that, you know, there's goodness in people, and we can all be inclusive. I think he defends Steve, and he's like, Steve didn't put you behind bars. It wasn't Steve was a good man, right? So I think he's the one that, you know, he's the message of unity that I think sometimes art imitates, you know, life. And I think, you know, maybe the world needs Sam in the real world right now, someone like Sam. Yeah, right.
I agree.
It's the timing is really crazy because they didn't even plan for this to be out at this point in time. It's supposed to come out earlier. But the fact that there's this, you know, media fueled race war going on right now on the news, and then you have this story playing out, is really, the timing is insane. It just makes you think, you know, through art, you know, you can find unity and maybe, you know, hopefully more people watch this show and let it resonate the way it has with at least me as a viewer. So for me, that kind of kicks off this next phase, which is Sam's development into it's very obvious he's going to take on the role of Captain America to me, which you predicted at the beginning of the season. And goes back to New Orleans to help his sister, basically get the business back off the ground or sell their boat, try to get some money out of it. And he starts uniting the hometown, basically the community, to you know, call in favors because his family was always giving back to the community. One thing leads to another, and while he's doing that, Bucky goes and finds Zemo in Sokovia and puts a gun to his head. You think, oh man, he's gone full Winter Soldier. He's going to blow his brains out. Pulls the hammer back, shoots, chamber's empty, drops the bullets on the ground, which kind of shows you his growth and that he does kind of have some of a moral compass. And you know, there's the Dora Milaje again. They come up behind Zemo, and Zemo basically says, I don't hold any grudges against you. I crossed my name off your book, which makes him again a likable villain. And he's off to Wakanda to basically live out the rest of his days in a Wakandan prison. And we'll see if that's what really ends up happening. I think Zemo, we haven't seen the end of Zemo.
He's being set up, in my opinion, for a big role, which also will play into the end of this episode. But the Thunderbolts, which are kind of a team of, it's kind of like Marvel's version of like the Suicide Squad over at DC. Where they assemble a bunch of anti-hero / villains to as a superhero group. And I believe he will be their leader. So he's definitely not done. And I think he's only going to have a bigger role to play based off of the reception he's gotten throughout the show, because as I said last week, and I know you agree, he's just been such a standout, and I want to see, I have to see more of him.
Yeah, same. And I think I don't think we're done with him in this series, but I also, you know, hope we see more of him beyond this series. I also hope we see more Wakandans. And I feel like they're hinting at more. I don't know. Maybe it's the last we've seen of them in this series, but it just felt like they were hinting at more, and the reference to White Wolf. And
I see. It's funny. I think they're hinting at more, but not for this show. I do think we won't see them again. I don't think they'll be in the finale.
Well, at least something in the finale will be make reference to Wakanda, which is something I want to get into. Something I want to get into before the end of the episode, because Bucky calls in one last favor, asks the Wakandans, yes, and you don't know what true. He asks. What I have to say about that is, what's in the box? You know, like, what's in the box? Oh, yeah. If you ever seen Seven, the Bucky shows up next scene in New Orleans to help, to help out. And he gives Sam a box. And Sam just kind of looks at it and doesn't open it. And you're like, I'm sorry, I could barely watch the rest of the episode because I'm like, well, what's in the box? And they just like toss it aside and then keep moving on. Like, let's fix the boats. Let's do this. Let's do that. And so, you know, at that point, Bucky shows up to give him a gift from the Wakandans, which I'm going to assume is like some form of vibranium suit. Or
it's 100% his Captain America suit.
Yeah. But it's probably made of vibranium so he can withstand more impact. And
correct. Yes, because he's not the super soldier. I mean, I thought that was a nice touch to continue to have, you know, the Wakanda technology involved, because we no longer have Tony Stark. And like you said, with Bucky, has a future there and whatnot. I really liked that. That's definitely what it's going to be. I liked how that. I don't want to skip to the end, but how you didn't get to see the suit yet. And that is going to be the big, big moment for the finale.
Yeah. I wonder if they start the episode with him with it on, or if it like he just doesn't. And then all of a sudden it's like mid episode. He's like standing there with his
stick. Yeah. I've been thinking about that. I feel like the last episode has to be pretty like action packed. Like, I feel like this show had a ridiculous budget, and quite frankly, I don't necessarily, as much as I love this show, I'm not sure where that huge budget went. And I'm wondering if this is going to have epic battle.
It has to be. Well, first off, it went to the episode one wingsuit scene. And then this whole last episode is me action packed. Yeah. I mean, so they've built out this huge, all right. So you still got the Flag Smashers, right? So Carly doesn't play a huge role in this episode. You finally catch up with her. They basically, Isaiah shows back up. Not Isaiah, sorry. Torres shows back up, who's basically going to be the new Falcon. So earlier in the episode, Torres shows up. He's like, oh, you damaged your wings. And basically, it was a metaphor, like, the wings are gone. And basically, Sam says, keep them. I don't want them. And so Torres is obviously going to be a new sidekick slash Falcon, which you predicted at the beginning of the season. So another chalked up prediction for you. I think he repairs those, becomes a new Falcon. And then, hopefully there's like maybe even a spinoff series with the new Captain America and Torres. I like the character of Torres quite a bit. So where was I going with that? I don't even know where I was going with that.
I think you were just talking about how he's going to have the suit and, you know, maybe he'll be part of the action or whatnot. Maybe we'll get to see that in the final episode or.
Oh, right. So they're building that up. So you got Torres he's definitely going to be part of the action. He ends up calling Sam and basically being like, hey, I got a line in on where the Flag Smashers are. We've been seeing them all throughout the world, but this time they have a presence in New York. And it's like, oh man, so it's hitting home now. It's on American soil. Sam's got to do something about it, right? Yep. And Carly's there in New York, and we find out that our beloved our dear, our beautiful Sharon Carter is playing for the wrong team, and she basically links up. This is where Matt Lesmeister's prediction came true. Georges Beltruc, the Leaper, is alive. He did survive from episode one, and he gets a phone call from who were both now on the same page, the Power Broker, aka Sharon Carter, and she's like, hey, I've got another job for you. And she's basically, she knows he wants revenge against Falcon Sam. She's not Sam's friend right now, unless she's got something bigger in play. Maybe there's some connection two things are happening right now, in my opinion. All right. Because Sharon's too good for this. All right. She's not a bad girl. I love her. Okay. She's either working in some capacity for Nick Fury, and there's a bigger play here, or she's a Skrull.
That's a good theory. I think she could be a Skrull. Because they're going to be a huge part of the universe going forward. I mean, with Secret Invasion, and probably that's going to be a big event, kind of like the Avenger movies leading up to. And it's kind of like, who is a Skrull, who isn't? I mean, even, which we'll talk about, the big character that we haven't talked about yet that made an appearance in this episode, she could even be a Skrull. We won an entire Spider-Man movie with two of the characters being Skrulls. So it's,
Nick Fury, man?
The real Nick Fury is up in space,
just glaring down at everybody.
He's now in, and I don't want to butcher this because I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but it was the group that was in WandaVision, S.W.O.R.D. He's now basically running S.W.O.R.D., which is another version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Because we saw where he was at the end credits of the Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
He's
still up there?
I think he's still up there. They don't really need, quote unquote, his help on Earth anymore right now. So that's where he's up. And
yeah,
it's a good way to like have him still involved, but like not really involved, I guess. Like
Nick Fury is so important to the intergalactic peace brokerage.
Come on, get Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah. Anyway, I think there's a bigger play with Sharon. I don't know how you just break bad like that. But maybe, you know, we talked about it. She's bitter. It's like, but to turn against Sam like that, it was a heartbreaking thing to watch for me, even though you've been kind of saying it all along. And I'm like,
I feel like she thinks that they did her dirty. So she doesn't owe them anything. Like, that's the vibe that I'm getting from her.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's got, you know, every villain in the MCU has some sort of motive that, you know, is in some weird way justified. So we'll see how it pans out. But basically, you know, Georges, played by one of my favorite MMA fighters, shows up and he's like, you know, let's go to war, basically. So now the Flag Smashers, they've got this alliance. There's a bunch of them, and they're ready to just light stuff up. Like, my phone's lighting up. You probably hear buzzing every second here. That's what happens when I take an hour off of work on a weekday. There's going to be an epic battle. There's going to be an epic battle, and my dream is that somehow the Dora Milaje come back, somehow Zemo's plays a role, and there's just this epic battle. But I think what's going to end up happening is it'll be, you know, new Captain America. You have Torres. You have some fun moments between them. You know, Bucky going full White Wolf, and squaring up against Carly. Sam trying to talk Carly off the ledge. John Walker playing some sort of role. I mean, they've got a lot to unpack in less than an hour.
I feel like it's going to be over. Like the last episode was over, like, I mean, barely over like a minute, probably. Like it was a true hour. I'm assuming this episode is going to be at least that or a little bit longer.
This one didn't need to be an hour. I'll tell you that much. It felt like they extended that boat like renovation scene way beyond what it needed to.
Totally agree.
You know, unless they build out a really good love story with Bucky, I think the flirting is actually a one and done. I don't think that's going to come back. Maybe it will, but he was flirting with Sam's sister, which was kind of cool. But
yeah, I think that was just to be funny.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to end up anywhere. But you know, a little bit longer than it needed to be, but it was lighthearted. I think it needed to be, because I think the next episode is going to get a little dark. And there's going to be some battles. There's going to be some lost lives. It's going to be interesting, but I'm pumped for it. But basically, that's what ends up happening is you've got this relationship building as Bucky visits Sam. They, you know, ultimately have a heart to heart while basically playing catch with with Steve's shield and they're throwing it against trees and catching it. And ultimately, you know, I have a question for you. And, you know, they keep saying Steve's gone. So I'm wondering if the old man Steve passed away or if he's like off somewhere. What do you think? Do you think we're going to see a guest role, guest appearance from Chris Evans in the last episode?
I would bet money he's in the last episode. Old man Steve is back. He was like my second prediction in my mind. I never really brought it up last time because I really wanted to be Wolverine. I thought maybe, oh, you know what? He's going to show up and people are going to go nuts. I definitely think he's going to come in and he's going to be like the final. There's going to be a scene between him and Sam where Sam's kind of like, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I now know why you chose me. And, you know, Steve's going to give him that one final pep talk that he needs to like go on and be Captain America.
I have a theory. Well, why do you think they keep saying he's gone?
Because the way I've interpreted that is they're saying that because at the end of Endgame, he goes on to live his life in another reality.
Yeah.
So as far as they're concerned, he is gone from quote unquote their timeline.
Yeah,
but it's not like they can just like.
But he handed the shield to he's old man Steve now.
Well, correct, because yeah. I guess I'm not articulating that correctly. Yes, he is old. He's kind of living under the radar. People think he is kind of gone. Like the world thinks he's gone, not us as viewers, but kind of like the whole Isaiah Bradley type thing. And he's kind of just lived under the radar and lived his quote unquote happy ending with Peggy. I don't really think Steve's like a phone call away for them.
I've got a different theory.
Okay, I want to hear it.
If Agent Carter passed away of old age and Steve, you know, came, gave his shield up and it was like getting his closure, maybe he's up in, maybe he really is up in space. Like they reference in that episode one, he's on the moon and he's watching us. Maybe he's with Nick. Maybe
that would be Nick hilarious.
He's with Nick Fury. Maybe he's, you know, not, you know, fighting any battles, but, you know, doing good by, you know, being a broker of peace of some sort, sitting up on the moon base. And it'll be a funny throwback. Like, whoa, shit, he really was.
Not only would that be an amazing throwback. I mean, I know, obviously, the world is a lot different than when Endgame came out. And when, obviously, that movie was made where the, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s and the Chris Evans of the world were like, we're done. We're like, we've loved this journey. It's been amazing. We're going to go and, you know, explore different career opportunities. Those types of movies that they want to work on just aren't really going to be as a thing in a post-COVID or even COVID world right now. Big budget movies are what's always going to be safe that people want to see. they're gonna want that Marvel money again, in my opinion. They will be back, and for all you know, that would could be a great setup for, you know, Chris Evans to come back and play the role. You don't, he doesn't need to be on screen that much, but he's kind of involved. Just like, I mean, I personally think Robert is going to be back as an AI voice for, in the series. And because one of the shows that's going to be coming out, it's not for a long time, but Ironheart, which is essentially a female version of Iron Man, I think he's going to play a role in that show.
That'd be awesome. But yeah, I'd love to see him. I think everyone would be blown away if they brought him back. I think Marvel goes big. I think that's my theory. We'll see if it comes to fruition. If not, I'm sure they'll find another way to blow our minds. But it'd be cool. It'd be a cool little, and I'd love to see that interaction with him and Sam. So I really hope he's not dead. And that when they say he's gone, you know, they were in on him actually being doing moon stuff. So that would be really funny. And seeing Torres' reaction would be great. I think we're both going to agree on, you know, who takes the shield this week, right?
Yeah, but before we get that, we kind of glanced over the rest of the John Walker arc of the episode, which I want to talk about real quick. So after he, you know, gets discharged and stripped of all rank, and, you know, he throws a temper tantrum, which, though, quite frankly, I thought that scene was really powerful because, you know, he's sitting there telling everyone, like, you know what, I've served my entire life. I feel like a lot of people feel this way in real life. Like, it was, to me, a pretty accurate interpretation of how some veterans may feel. He basically was like, I've done everything you've told me for my entire career. I've served you and only you. I've never cared about myself. I've only done what I've, he was the perfect soldier, which is hence why they picked him to be Captain America. And, you know, what he really thought he did was fine. Because, you know, he is something he would have done at war. He was saving his buddy and they really just didn't care. And, you know, he storms off. And when he leaves there, he's outside sitting with his wife, kind of just, you know, she's trying to console him and she's saying, you know, we're going to get through this, you know, it's going to be okay. And then this is when the camera shot, you just see, you know, two high heels walking. And you, like, as a viewer, I was like, okay, this is clearly going to be this big cameo that everyone's been talking about. And it's no other than Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And she's kind of playing a centric character. She kind of sits down and is, you know, talking about, you know, I've heard of you, you know, your talents, you know, basically you can kind of get the vibe. She's trying to recruit him, gives him, you know, a business card, and, you know, her name's a mouthful. Her character's name is Valentina Allegra de la Fontaine. And she's played a few different roles within the universe. She's been like Madame Hydra. She was a member of SHIELD. She actually used to date Nick Fury. I think she's kind of going to be playing a Nick Fury type of recruiting people for either, I don't know if it's going to be the Thunderbolts or Dark Avengers. They've been the same before in the comics. There's just so many different iterations, but
yeah,
I think that she is going to try to create her own team. And that's starting with John Walker, who he's definitely not a one and done for this series. He is going to play a big role going forward. And there is an end credit scene, which I feel like we can talk about right now because it's just pertaining to this. It was a nice, in my opinion, throwback to when you see Tony making his armor. You kind of see John creating he's, you know, spray painting his Captain America stuff, getting rid of it. He's clearly creating his US agent attire. And he is, I think, going to be the leader of whatever team she's creating.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. And it seems now with the Marvel Disney Plus shows that the final two episodes seem to have the end credit scenes, because that's what WandaVision did and that's what this show did. So I'm assuming that's the way they're going to do it going forward.
Didn't watch the end credit scene, so now I have to go back and watch it.
Oh, okay. So I just spoiled that for you. Because I was like, you know, Matt probably had to have liked that scene. It was pretty cool. It's pretty badass. So
watch it. I'm gonna watch it right now. Well,
yeah. So for all you listening, it seems like I said that will be everyone loves a Marvel end credit scene. I mean, they've made that like super popular mainstream. You always stay and watch the credits, which I think is great. It allows people, if you actually pay attention to the credits, you get to see all the people who worked really hard on the movie, and then you get to see a fun scene. Marvel always has everything connect. So I would definitely make sure you stay at the end of the finale as well, because there'll 100% be a scene.
Yeah, nice. I'm going to watch that. And I think she's going to be the key role. This character is going to be the key role of bringing Hydra back into the fold, whatever's left of Hydra. I don't think Hydra went away for good. And so I'm interested to see how this plays a bigger role. I had some theories on other characters that might make a cameo in this series, and I think I was wrong. But there's like the Russian version of Captain America, which is Black Widow's adoptive dad. And I thought he was going to be in it, but I don't think they'll find room to bring him in. Maybe. No, probably not. So,
which too, speaking of Black Widow, kind of I was alluding to earlier. I mean, this has been said in interviews now when she was talking about being, you know, Falcon the Winter Soldier, keeping under wraps. Julie Louis-Dreyfus is going to, her character has a role in Black Widow, probably just a small role. Ironically, she was supposed to be introduced first in that, and I think this was going to be like a cool, you know, they're setting her up like kind of like the Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury, just having these small little roles sprinkled in. So now we're going to get to see that. So that's, I mean, and you don't get a caliber actors like that to be in a show for like 10 seconds. So
yeah, no, she'll be a big, obviously, yeah, she's going to be a huge role in the future of the MCU, and probably many movies, shows, which I'm excited for. She's a great actress. I think we got, 30 seconds of screen time with her, but charismatic, screen grabber. I think it'll be really fun, and hopefully we see more of her in the next episode, but it might have been a one and done for this series, and more just focused on John Walker's arc, closing out the Flag Smasher's vengeance story arc before he goes on to bigger ventures. You think he survives this series,
John Walker?
Yeah,
100%. Yeah,
who do you think?
I also think he for people who don't know, like that's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son. I mean, he's a very up and coming in demand actor. Weirdly enough, the first role he's ever auditioned for, he said, was Captain America, which is funny that he ended up getting this role.
Yeah.
I think he will show up. I don't think he's going to be interconnected like the main Avengers were in movies, but I think he will ultimately get, whether he's a member of the Thunderbolts or Dark Avengers or whatnot, he is going to be part of the plan for Val going forward.
Yeah.
He will be their leader. And he's going to get like-minded type people who, like, they're anti-heroes. They don't think that. I know most villains think what they're doing isn't wrong, but at least with the anti-hero angle, you know, ultimately, you know, they do some good, kind of like a Loki. He's going to lead, in my opinion, a band of people like that.
Yeah. Makes sense. I think that's a fair assessment. You think Zemo becomes part of that Thunderbolt crew?
Yeah, I do. I think he will be like, it's weird. Like I said, it gets confusing because there's been so many different iterations. Like Thunderbolts is more of the original. Then there's the Dark Avengers. And at times, the Thunderbolt team has been Dark Avengers. It's had Norman Osborn be their leader at times. I think Zemo is going to be the, like, how do I want to compare this? Where John Walker's the Captain America, Zemo will kind of be like the Tony Stark of the team. Like, he's one of their leaders too. I think he's going to kind of talking maybe to Val, let's say, off screen, and he's kind of in the trenches getting the team together.
Yeah, Makes sense. I think so. I think that'll be good.
I also think that's kind of how they got Dinnerball to come back to play the role. Not that who doesn't want to be part of the Marvel again, but they probably laid out an up plan for him that he wasn't just a one and done.
Yeah, that's true. Fair. So what would you rank this episode?
I love this episode. I'm going to go between this and the pilot. I think this actually is maybe my favorite episode. And I'm going to give it the 10 out of the 10. I loved it.
I'm going to give it an 8.8 because I think it was a little bit long in the middle. I love the opening scene. I do like everything that they're starting to develop, but I did leave the episode wanting a little bit more, which is what it's intended for. Yeah. It's a good thing. Yeah, what's in the box? So the episode ends. We didn't say this. The episode ends. Sam opens the box. You see him looking into it, and you're like, "All right, what is it?" Obviously, I think it's his new gear, his suit up. I'm anxious to see what he's going to look like as Captain America. And Bucky basically takes off and says, you know, call me when you find a lead. I'm willing to, close this out with you. We're a team or we're not a team. And they have that banter, that friendly banter again. But yeah, obviously they're all going to come back together. It's going to be interesting. So in terms of predictions, do you think for sure Sharon's is a baddie?
I do, but I'd be pleasantly surprised and I wouldn't be mad if she is like working undercover, whether it's for S.W.O.R.D. Mm-hmm. or something, and you know she's tricking us along, but I personally think she's bad.
Damn it Sharon. Well, I still love her even when she's.
It's funny because I hope maybe she has a bigger role to play with going in the future. If she does have ultimately is redeemed and she is working for Nick Fury still, like, because if she doesn't, isn't the power broker, in my opinion, she was kind of wasted. Like she's kind of pointless in this series.
Yeah. No, she's got a bigger role. It's just it doesn't end with this series. What does it look like? What happens when Sam finds out she betrayed him? Be interesting. So Sam takes the shield.
Sam takes the shield.
Not just of this. I think we've come to the point in the series where we've got to give the permanent shield away. And I think we could agree that Sam Wilson is Captain America.
Question is, though, speaking of this, the going back to the suit, though, I know that obviously his wings were ripped off. He gave them to Torres, and you know I had predicted he will be like the new quote unquote Falcon as his sidekick. But do you think the suit that's made for him from Wakanda also has wings?
No.
I think it does.
I think it's made of vibranium, and I think he had an ultimate Rocky scene here, a training scene where he's trying to learn how to use the shield and do all sorts of acrobatics. I think he's changing his style to be more like Steve's and be more Captain America-ish and less pilot, and get used to fighting without the safety net of his Falcon wings.
What's more American though than an eagle?
Listen, now, no, I think we can make this bet and see who wins. I don't think it has wings.
Okay. I go back and forth. Pardon me. I mean, they clearly made it feel like it won't have wings with, you know, it was foreshadowed the entire episode with them coming off, given the Torres and whatnot. But part of me feels like with the tech, not like this is going to be a high tech suit. I mean, the Black Panther suit just like comes right on him and he can make it come right off. Why not have an option to have wings?
Because Black Panther doesn't fly, man.
Yeah, no, I know Black Panther doesn't fly, but I'm just saying, like, why not? I mean, his entire entire fighting style so far has been having that as a, you know.
But I think, isn't that the purpose of that whole montage? He was like retraining himself out of fight.
Well, he needs to fight with the shield.
Yeah.
I mean, that,
he was doing all sorts of somersaults and flips and, you know, handstands and cartwheels. No,
you're not wrong. I mean, like, I don't think I'm 100% saying it's going to have wings, but I'm not going to be surprised if it does. But I'm also not going to be disappointed if it doesn't. I know I'm just going on rambling about it, but I was thinking about it. I mean, I feel like he could. This is going to be like where Steve's suit was not high tech at all. He didn't need that. That wasn't his jam. I think that we're going to get a good mixture of, you know, a Captain America, Iron Man type suit or Black Panther suit for Sam. Because, I mean, I think they clearly set that up. There's no way they just made him some like suit.
Yeah.
If they did, it wouldn't have come from Wakanda.
It'll be high tech. I get it.
So what do you think it'll have that sets it apart? Or is it just that it makes him strong because he doesn't have the advantage of the serum?
I think it gives him, the special abilities to keep up with super soldiers and take high impact, damage. I think it's just a cool looking vibranium based suit. And I think there'll be some technology similar to T'Challa's, but I don't think it's going to be like a flying Iron Man suit or anything of the sort.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily think that either. I just think it's going to have wings.
I don't. All right. Well, we will find out in the next episode. And I think that's probably what we're going to have to start off with because, this might be one of the last bets we can make with regards to this specific series, unless, of course, season 2 gets announced, which would be wonderful. But they might also just move this into movies. What do you think? You think they're going to continue this series or do you think they're going to dive into the movies or just,
I don't know. It's funny. Cause I was just about to bring that up. So I'm happy you did. I mean, they've been really weird about like saying if these shows are one-offs or whatnot, like part of me is like, you know, in the television entertainment world, if a show does well, they bring another season. It's all about ratings or for now streaming, like impressions of how many people watch it. Though I do feel like Kevin Feige has enough clout at this point that he's going to do whatever the hell he wants. I mean, this show beat The Mandalorian for the top most watched show when it first launched.
Yep.
So whenever you hear that, like if we were on a traditional network or even like a Netflix, they're like announcing a season 2 if they did that type of numbers. Sorry, I don't want to keep rambling on. It's just, it's weird because I think this is such a special case. Like I think it could have a second season, but I feel like a lot of these shows are going to be one-offs that have the main characters that we've already seen before, where like Miss Marvel or She-Hulk, for example. I think they'll get multiple seasons. I think they'll cross over to the movies, but they're main playing ground is always going to be Disney Plus, where I think WandaVision is a one and done that set up other stuff. And we've already seen Vision and the Scarlet Witch. They can have the presence on the big screen.
Yeah, fair.
So no, we'll see. I don't think it will.
I was surprised when I saw the ratings because it seemed online that everyone was saying it wasn't getting as much hype as WandaVision. And I kind of disagreed. And I was like, what are you talking about? It has a ton of hype. Like, look at how the people are reacting to Zemo. And, like, every episode, there's some sort of impact all over the internet. But a lot of hate online about, well, it's not living up to the WandaVision hype. I think this show has lived up beyond WandaVision hype. And, I hope they carry forward at least the characters in some form, if not the show. Bring them back into the movies. I'm not done consuming this entertainment. I think I love this world that they set up in the Captain America universe. And I'm pumped to see what they do with Sam carrying the title of Captain America. and yeah, I think they've done an impeccable job with this show. So we'll see. We'll see how it ends.
It actually bothers me that some people don't like the show, if I'm being honest. I loved WandaVision, and I think this is, I don't want to say much better, but like, to me, I'm enjoying it. They're two totally different shows. They're not comparable, but this to me has just been like epic, and this is what I wanted. But a lot of people are saying it's boring, and I know a lot of people said that about a WandaVision too. Like, I don't know what you want. Like, this isn't, I don't think this is boring. To me, this feels just like I'm watching one of the Marvel movies. Obviously it's longer and can be dragged on, but it makes me feel like a lot of the, you know, non sweaties or nerds like ourselves just don't really like Marvel then as much as they think they do, because it's not just a 2-hour spectacle.
Exactly.
Like, there's nothing boring about this. Like, it actually pisses me off.
These are the same people clapping because Fast and Furious is going to space. So take it with a grain of salt, my friend.
So true. Yes, they don't want substance. They just want dumb explosions. It's upsetting.
Yeah, it is. And the substance is what makes this great. It's why the MCU is great, because they've hired great actors to bring these characters to life and make them resonate for extended periods of time, where you want to see them over and over and over again in theaters, and you don't ever get fatigue, whereas other franchises you do get fatigue. So yeah, for me, it's all about the character development, diving deeper into these characters. And for me, this show just got me even more excited for the upcoming shows. I'm excited for Hawkeye. Pretty much I'm back on the Disney Plus train.
Good.
So, yeah. All right. Well, anything else before we wrap up this episode?
No, this is a great episode. It's sad to see that the show will be ending, but then I don't know if you're a show that I'm going to definitely review. Hopefully you'll do it with me. Are you going to get into the Bad Batch? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm pretty pumped for that. I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, we've got content, infinite amount of content. As long as they continue making Marvel movies, DC movies, Star Wars movies, Lord of the Rings, if it is fantasy, if it is comic, if it is geek, we're going to cover it. And I'm going to keep doing this because I have fun. I just like talking about this stuff, whether anybody else listens or not. But what I will say this week to our subscribers, to our listeners, give us a like, give us a follow, hit the subscribe button, start giving us some reviews. Unless they're bad reviews, then you can just go pound sand. But if you have a good review, leave it for us. Get the word out. I love talking about this stuff. I love getting together with Charlie every week. And we hope you guys are enjoying listening to us. So let us know in the comments.
Awesome. Thank you. See you next week, guys.
See you next week. Nerds be heard.